I'm Ronnie Allen, and I am so pleased to be talking with a recording artist who, back in 1963, cried at her party. But that turned out to be a happy party, because she started her career with a number one million seller. It's My Party, and then followed it up with Judy's Turn to Cry, She's a Fool, You Don't Own Me, That's the Way Boys Are, Maybe I Know, etc., etc., and so forth. Welcome, Leslie Gore.
Thank you, Ronnie. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's been a very blessed bunch of decades for me. It's a wonderful way to live your life by making music and sometimes even making other people happy. And I'm very blessed to have been one of those people who can do that.
By the way, you were an Academy Award nominee. It was not an acting role, but it was for a song that I believe you co-wrote with your brother, Michael Gore, Out Here on My Own.
That's correct, yes.
From the motion picture called Fame. Yesterday I interviewed Jean Thomas, who said that she did backups for you, and one of them was Maybe I Know.
Absolutely. Jeannie Thomas, Mikey Harris, and Ellie Greenwich were kind of my girls' group, and they were amazing. Jeannie Thomas sang on a lot of stuff,
yeah. And
they really helped me create an incredible sound.
Your early hits from 1963 through 1965 were produced by Quincy Jones. And then one major hit from 1967 was produced by Bob Crewe. And Bob, during an interview that I did with him back in 2008, told me something very special about you, Leslie. He said that you had this uncanny ability to perfectly double up your voice.
One of the things that Quincy did very, very early on, with the very first record we did, It's My Party, we all finished the session and we put on our coats and we went downstairs and we're standing in the lobby and Quincy signals me to come back upstairs. We go back upstairs and I discover that what he wants me to do is double the vocals that I have put on. So we're basically setting up again, and the reason that we had to do it that way was the union didn't allow doubling at the time. This is 63. I was standing there listening to my voice, and I quickly realized that if I was singing one voice and hearing another voice, it was hard to know which one was the one I was producing. So I quickly had to adjust to that, and I asked Phil Ramone, or I asked the engineer at the time, I said, please put the voice that I'm producing now in my left ear and put the voice that I need to double in my right ear. And I made them slightly different in volume so I could listen to one in one ear and produce the other. And over a period of time, I wound up just sort of kind of being good at that and developed kind of a technique.
Was the union okay with what you did then?
No, of course not.
But you never got into any problems with it.
Exactly. And, no, we didn't have any problems with it.
And you're sure we won't have any problems when we reveal this now to the world? I don't think so. At this point, 50 years later...
I think if we do, it's too bad.
You're right, and they can cry if they want to.
Thank you.
Recording spent 3 weeks at number one on the chart, and it was the first of many hit recordings, including one in 1965 called Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, written by Marvin Hamlisch. And then in 1967, you recorded a very different song, co-written by Marvin Hamlisch. Actually, the first one, Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, was exclusively written by Marvin. The one in 1967, co-written by Marvin and Howard Liebling, and it was a song called California Nights. And I'm thinking, this is a girl who grew up in Tenafly, New Jersey, and the first hit single that she has, which mentions a place, it's pretty far removed, California Nights. And this time, you had a different producer.
That would be Bob Crew.
Another great one.
Bob came to me with his brother and said, how would you like to record with us? And I actually signed with Bob. We did quite a few recordings. In fact, most of what we did was never released, but California Nights, of course, was. I remember that Bob was an extremely extroverted human being, and musically, he was a total force. I do remember my sessions with him. They were always quite incredible, always energetic. Bob would very often wind up standing on the console and dancing as the mixes went down. And the atmosphere in the studio was always very up and very party-like.
Having worked with Quincy Jones for your early hits, would you say that Bob had a very different style? I don't know if Quincy danced around in the studios.
They had a completely different style, but both of them were blessed with an enormous amount of talent. Quincy's musical talent, in terms of what was written down or what he could write, was more extensive than Bob's, but it didn't mean that Bob couldn't get his ideas across. He may not have been able to write them down on a piece of paper, as Quincy was able to do. Of course, he studied arrangement and did arrangements for Sarah Vaughan and Dinah Washington. But Bob would often come into the studio with simply a song in his head and virtually give everyone parts around the room. So the talent was different, but they were both extraordinary. I worked with probably the two most incredibly talented producers ever.
California Nights. What was your reaction when you first heard the song?
Well, I loved the song. I was a great Marvin fan. I loved the opening. I loved the riff. I knew that Marvin had begun doing some composing and scoring out in Hollywood. And I know that he was very taken with it. And I was taken with the song. And in fact, wound up moving out to California myself for a number of years in the 70s.
Thank you.